This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
Petey! But you know what? Let's just get right to this shit. How do you two not know what the XO means? And Petey, how do you not know getting the XO from a man at the end of a text means, hey, Petey, listen, if you happen to want to bend me over a couch, I'd really, really have no problem with it. I mean, you two better hope this show never ceases to exist, because you motherfuckers are going to continue to need to hear from me. Later.
Kiss me.
First off, let's hit the Robin Williams thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever met the guy? I feel like I'm the only comedian that doesn't have a photo with this guy.
Oh, man. I don't have a photo with him, but I met him a few times. I should have took a photo.
Yeah, I never met him. Apparently, I've been out of the loop. Give me your experience.
Once at the Gotham Comedy Club, which was great. I had friends visiting, Jackie and I, and they all came with Jackie and me and my two friends, married couple. And, you know, they never come to New York. I'm like, there's no one famous here or anything. It's just a weekday spot. We walk right in, bam, sitting right there is the old Gotham, is Robin Williams. And then his son went to NYU, so he would come visit his son, and he played a Comedy Cellar every night for a while. So, you know, like one stretch for like 2 weeks. So he'd be up at the table every night, and, you know, got to the point where like one night he came in and he sat down and he's like, hey, Pete. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm fucking putting that on my resume. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I'd say 5 days after he was done with that 2 week run at the Cellar, if he saw me on the street, he may give a double take and go, you're a comedian, right? But he certainly doesn't remember me, and I certainly don't know him. But, you know, for like that 2 week run, we'd see him every night, and he still would bop into the Cellar. I haven't been down there in a long time, but I know he would still always bop in. Nice guy, just really sweet, low key, man. Freaking crazy, crazy. You know, like I was on the phone with my mom, and she's like, you know, asking about the comics, and she's like, you know, they were really bashing all you guys, saying that you're all just so depressed and you're all always fighting demons, and I don't get that about you at all. And, you know, and I go,
Can we get into this? Is this something that a lot of comedians subscribe to because it's like cool to be like coming from a dark place? And that's how I get my. I don't see any of this in either of us. I feel like we grew up with normal families, happened to be funny, and now are doing it for a living. There was no molestation, demons, darkness, right?
My father would come home and he'd sit at the end of the table and start using his hands and tell these great stories, and I'd be like, I think I can make a living doing that.
Can you be funny and come from a normal family?
When I'm depressed, man, the last thing I want to do is crack jokes and make people laugh, man.
Well, I don't know. And again, listen, with this depression and this whole thing that people are saying that it's a cowardly way to go and all this. Listen, I do think there is a chemical imbalance in some people. They're just not wired correctly, and maybe they can't get out of this depression that they're in, and it's something that they're born with. I understand that. But on the flip side of that, for myself, it's like life is about happy, sadness, depressed, this, that, you know, every emotion. I think we're living in a society where everybody just thinks you're supposed to be one emotion your whole life. It's part of life, no?
No, it is. But I mean, you know, as far as this depression goes, it's when they're supposed to be happy and they're still not happy. And that's got to be really tough to live with, man, you know? I mean, like, you know, like my mom was asking me about depression. She's like, you're not depressed, you know? And I go, the only thing that makes me depressed is this business? You know? I go, yeah. I didn't get into it because I am depressed. I got into it because I'm happy and I like telling jokes. But when I do get depressed, it's because it's just a very frustrating business. But no, for me, I can't come from that place. But there's a lot of guys that are so great on stage. They're literally sad and depressed on stage, but they're being funny. And it's like they just don't equate the laughter with happiness. It's not about that, you know? And so, you know, to say, and I saw a guy, a freaking news anchor today, say, you know, yesterday on Fox calling Robin Williams a coward for killing himself, like you said. And wow, that's a fucking slippery slope to say about, you know, someone who does that, because you don't know what's going on in their head.
Yeah, you just don't know. You know, I mean, you just don't know, man. And it's a sad deal. And the amount of coverage that this is getting is out of this world. It's like the JFK assassination.
I know. And look, we are a comedy show, and I know there's no silver lining, but let's start getting to the jokes here. And I'd like to start by saying, if there is any silver lining, it's I've been seeing some fantastic Robin Williams clips over the past 3 days. And I got to tell you, the one thing I'm getting more and more out of watching these clips is the Fonz was fucking better than I even remember. More fantastic than I even remember. Have you seen the clip they keep showing of Mark for Mark the first time he sees Fonz on Happy Days?
No, I don't. I forgot that Mark originated on Happy Days.
Yeah, and they say, you know, right away he's a genius and he's unbelievable, Robin Williams, and he's going to have his own show, and they always keep showing that clip. And it was, and he is great. But, dude, Fonz was even funnier. Fonz opens the door, and it's Robin Williams, and he walks away, and then he comes back to the door, and it's just, it's the Fonz. I miss the Fonz.
I think the Fonz doesn't get enough credit as being one of the best TV characters of all time.
If not the best. And, you know, when they say this stuff about, and they use it as an example for other sitcoms when they have nothing left to write about, Jump the Shark, and it's based, as everyone knows, off the episode of the Fonz where he jumped the shark. And to me, that was one of the greatest episodes of TV ever. He didn't even take the leather off. It didn't even get wet. The other guy chickened out. He didn't even have to jump the shark. But the Fonz is like, I'm still jumping the fucking shark.
Yeah, no, it's in the name alone, Arthur Fonzarelli. Where do you come up with that?
And by the way, that was something like episode 6. In episode 2, he was camping once. And all the animals were making noise, remember that? And he leaned up in his sleeping bag, and he snapped his fingers and yelled to all the animals in the woods, "Cool it!" And the whole woods got quiet. Now, I ask you, that's not jumping the shark? Cool it! And, you know, even the president released a statement. Does it get any more huge than that? That when you pass away, the president literally has to go, get me a pen.
I know. Where is the cutoff on that? Lauren Bacall passed away.
Yes.
All right. Actress. 83 years old. 89 years old. No statement coming out of the White House with that. Is that because it's just expected that she was going to pass away soon? What is it?
Can you name two movies with her?
No.
Right. Do you know who she was married to? That's huge.
No.
Humphrey Bogart. Yeah. She broke up with Jesus to start dating Humphrey. Yeah, that's just a star that faded out, and you know, you wish everybody well in the afterlife at 89, of course. But Robin Williams was still doing his thing for the people, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you.
But I mean, like, what about, like, you know, if Justin Bieber was skydiving with his boys and he was found out he was smoking pot beforehand and he got tangled in his chute, and you know, it was unfortunate. Yeah,
I don't think you get anything out of the White House with that.
By the way, I got a list here. We don't normally do current events, but as far as the president stopping to say anything in condolences to Robin Williams is huge, because right now, dude, We got Gaza. We got Iraq with this ISIS shit. We got Ebola virus. We got St. Louis riots. We got Tony Stewart running people over on a track. Oh, and for dessert, we still got Putin taking over half of fucking Europe. So, I mean, do we get into any of this? Because we normally don't.
No, it doesn't look good, man. It just doesn't look good all around. There's too much stuff going on at once. And I got to tell you, if I was the president at this point, I'd just say, listen, man, I'm resigning.
Well, you know, when they do these press conferences, like, can somebody, are they allowed to, as far as screening questions, can you just, president goes to you and goes, Pete Corielli, the Pete and Sebastian Show, yes, what's your question? I just want to go, I want to rattle off all these things again. They look at him and go, do you think things are going well? I'm just curious what you're thinking. Making sandcastles on fucking... Dude, you got two more years, then you can make sandcastles the rest of your life. What is with vacations for presidents? That drives me nuts.
So you don't think the president should get a vacation? Or, listen, is the vacation when everything is cool? Like, he looks at the world and go, not much going on right now. Let's go to the Bahamas.
Yeah, pretty much. Absolutely. And when I say nothing's going on, if we just had Ebola virus, I'd be like, go tee off. It's 1,000 people. They're not even in this country. We got this covered. Go golf. But I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And I'm not saying it's his fault, but you are driving.
You got the wheel.
You got the wheel, guy. I mean... Your idle threats of pulling over and hitting people are not working. You need to actually pull. Bro, I haven't heard the word ISIS since, I think I first heard it Monday. And they're like, this shit's been around forever. I thought it was a fucking drink with vodka.
Yeah, is this something new? Like, I thought it was Al-Qaeda. Now all of a sudden it's ISIS?
ISIS.
What is that?
I hate that name. I hate hearing it. ISIS. I don't know. It's an offshoot of Al-Qaeda that apparently is even stronger than Al-Qaeda. And you can get it by rubbing up against a bush, apparently. And yeah, and it comes out during the rainy season.
I just heard of it too last month. They're saying ISIS is a threat. I'm thinking, where did this thing come from?
This
is another terrorist organization we got to be worried about.
Oh, man. And then I'm seeing a commercial today with a woman, some senator going, she's standing, bro. She's standing at the border of like Arizona to Mexico, and there's a giant wall. And she's doing one of these, look at this wall. There was a time all of us were on the other side of the wall. Where do you think we all came from? The other side of that wall. When people get over that wall or through that wall, we have to help them. They have every much a right to be here as we do. And I'm looking at the screen, just keep saying, I agree with everything you're saying, honey, but there's just no room. There's no room. There's no room, man. We are at capacity.
There's no money. And listen, my father was an immigrant. He came over with the correct paperwork. He didn't climb the wall.
Yes! And he came when there was a vacancy sign, man.
Yeah! We closed!
It's like, you know, you look at India now, and I was watching this thing on the news about India. I've been watching a lot of news and visiting my parents. My mom always has it on. And first of all, wouldn't you like to take a walk through the slums of India just for a day, you know, in the proper footwear with your own bottled water, just to check it out? It seems unbelievable.
India?
In India, yeah.
I'm good.
And, you know, they're talking about the biggest problem is people going to the bathroom everywhere, right? And they say it's even worse in the villages because people for years and centuries have just been going out into the fields. And they say it. And the women customarily try to hold it all day, and they don't go out into the fields until nighttime out of respect to go to the bathroom. And now they got a problem with rape, so the women are going to the bathroom at night, and they're getting raped. So they start building toilets And they got tons of toilets now. But here's the problem. They can't convince these people to start using the toilets. They're still preferring to go in the field. And I'm just like, my question to you is a toilet a hard sell? Like, don't you think if you sat on it once, you'd be sold?
I would think you would just sit there and go, this is nice.
The other day, I went to get on the toilet, and unbeknownst to me, Jackie had been on it going number one a few minutes earlier, so it was warm. Oh, that was nice.
Oh, when it's warm, it's really pleasant.
It's warm when it's from your wife. You ever get on a bowl in public and it's still warm? You're like, ew, it's still warm from another man's ass.
I called you out on the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Oh, man.
Video hasn't been posted yet, but by the time this airs, the video will be up and running. And I called you out. Give me your feelings on the Ice Bucket Challenge. Have you been seeing this stuff on Facebook, on Instagram? Where are you at with this?
Yes, I've seen it, man. Hey, look, it's a good cause. But the biggest hassle is the camera. I got to set it up, then I got to download it. But you know I'm not good with that shit.
I know. I mean, you could barely get text messages, let alone video yourself and put it online.
Oh, I could do it on my phone. All right, yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. Okay, bro. Now, what do? I just dump the bucket on my head with ice water, someone dumps it, and that's it, right?
Yeah, I guess the whole thing is to raise awareness. You either do it within the 24 hours or you don't donate the money. And you get on the thing, and the way I did it, somebody called me out on it. I didn't do it because I was looking for kind of a unique way to do it because I'm looking at everybody do this. And yeah, I know it's for a good cause, but the way they're doing it, there's no personality. You know, there's no, there's nothing. They sit in front of the camera and go, "Hi, my name's Frank Smith, and I'm going to do the ice cream." and they pour the water and they shut the thing. Give me some entertainment value.
I hear you. Did you see Mike Ditka's?
No.
Oh, it was great. There's like four guys who play for the Bears, and they're all lined up, and they're doing the challenge, and they water dump over their head. And then Mike Ditka walks into the camera, and he's got a cigar in his mouth, and he's got a little plastic cup of water. And he takes a cigar. He's got a cigar in one hand, a cup of water in the other hand. He takes the cigar and puts it in his mouth, and then he just dumps a little drop of water on his hand.
That's what I'm saying. Do something that's out of the box, creative. You don't have to just do the thing. So I was trying to figure out how to do it. Now, I come home. Lana's like, come in the backyard with me. And I need to take a photo of you. So the landscape architect has a... idea what the yard looks like with a person in it, just for size and scale.
Sure.
So she had a tripod set up. She had a tape measure in her hand. So I stood in front of this like little wall we have back there, and I was waiting for her to take a picture. And unbeknownst to me, my buddy Mike Faverman was behind me. And he dumped the water on me, and I had no idea. So they kind of surprised me with it.
Nice.
Now, I'm editing, having my sister, who is a professional editor, she edits movie trailers. She's splicing this up to make it look like a movie trailer. Right?
Nice, man.
So I'm going to do it. I'm going to post it online.
That is great.
As soon as I post it, you got 24 hours to do it yourself. Now, what I ask from you is be a little creative with it. Do a Mike Ditka-esque type thing. No?
All right.
Give me the best Pete Ice Bucket thing you could come up with.
When are you posting this, man? I need a little time to get the.
I would suspect that this thing's gonna post no later than tomorrow afternoon. So
that'd be perfect.
Then you got full to day Friday, all probably right. Friday, to do this damn thing.
All right. That sounds good, man.
Yeah. So I called out you. Lana called out her friend Fisher, and I called out Watt.
Oh, nice, man. I wonder if he's been called out already. Do you know? Is there a way?
I don't know. I just threw it out there. I was so stunned when I got this water thrown on my back. I was surprised. Listen, I haven't had anybody play a practical joke on me in, I'd say, at least 15 years. When's the last time somebody pranked you? And what was it?
God, I can't even remember, man.
Because are you a practical joker yourself? Do you do stuff like this?
Kind of with Jackie, but not really that way. You know, I'll do
this. Like what? What have you done?
Oh, I love it. Just the last time we flew, I did the old, I left my wallet. God, I can't believe I left my wallet. We're going to have to get a later flight. I don't know what we're going to do. You know, that kind of stuff. And then she's like, why do you always do that? And I go, because isn't it fun? Now I have my wallet. How exciting is that?
Yeah. The problem with me and Lana when we do practical jokes is I do them so good that it literally could stop her heart.
Can you remember whether it was to Lana or a friend, like one of your best that you've ever done?
I don't know. I don't know if I did this. What was it? This is kind of mean. I don't know if I did this to Lana. Was it Lana I did it to? Or like I was just like when she came home, I was just like on the floor. Or just like pat, like act like I was dead on the floor. On the floor. You imagine. It's terrible.
Oh, I've done that with Jackie. Dude, even to the point where I put ketchup on my neck and I have the knife laying there.
Oh, Jesus.
And the block we used to live on. We lived all the way at the end of the block. We had the first apartment, so I could see her before she could see me and give me plenty of time. So I ran in, I did it, and I swear to God, she walked in without skipping a beat, stepped right over me, and as she stepped over me, she said, "You are fucking bored."
That's when you really know someone. When you could do that. I mean, you're laying on the floor with ketchup on your neck, and she doesn't even bat an eye. She knows you.
Oh, that's my man. I'm not fooling with you. Hey, we're not through. That's my man.
Had an incident on the airplane, man. I yelled at an elderly man. I'm not feeling too good about it, but I get bumped up to first, which is nice, out of Buffalo. And I got the vape thing now. You've seen it, my e-vape cigarette ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
So I got nothing in it. You can't even fly with anything in it. It just happens to be inside this book that I'm reading, right? So at one point, I'm sipping my coffee, I'm reading the paper, and the flight attendant comes over, puts down some sugar, and she goes, "Oh, you actually can't use that." And I hold it up, and I go, "No, it's empty." And I show her, I go, it was in my book, I understand. And she goes, "Oh, okay." So maybe about a half hour after that, I go to sip my coffee, and I'm grabbing my pen, and I want to write something, and the damn vape thing is falling off the book. So I grab it, and I just put it in my mouth to hold it. I hear this guy, two seats behind me on the other side of the aisle, also in first class, this loud too, dude. He goes, "Miss, miss, miss." And she's buckled in. The flight attendant's buckled in, and she quick goes to get out of her thing. And I'm like, "Holy shit, what's going on?" And as she gets up, he points to me, and he goes to her, "He's doing it again. He's using it again. He's using it again." I look over at him. I go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, guy, whoa, what are you using what? I haven't used it once. It's empty. It's empty. It was in my mouth so it wouldn't fall out." And I hold it upside down. And I go, and he goes, "It was in your mouth." I go, "It's empty, guy. Relax." Jesus. Acting like a two-year-old. That's what I said to him, right? I go, "Why don't you calm down? She's sitting there working. You're making a pop-up because you're acting like a two-year-old."
Keep it going.
Yeah. So he looks at me and he goes, actually, I'm 30, you know? And I look back at him and I go, you were already over 30 in 1930, pal. I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was a good one. I go, you were already over 30 in 1930, pal. Jesus. But you're acting like a two-year-old now. That was just total silence. And then, of course, the guy next to me is like, what was that about? And I go, I put it in my mouth. And he goes, see, you know, right away he's like, fucking asshole.
Yeah, what the... No need to feel bad here, man. You were provoked.
And then at the end of the flight, I'm standing now waiting to deboard. And I turn around to grab my bag, and he's staring at me. And now I take a step towards him. The guy's got to be like 62 years old. And I go, why do you keep staring at me? And he goes, you're looking at me. And I go, oh, Jesus. Back to two. I go back to two again, huh? I turn back around. Because that's where I'm supposed to go. I'm staring at you because you're staring at me. Fucking Laurel and Hardy. Jesus Christ. You're 62. Go golf.
Doing it again?
Yeah.
That's this guy's got nothing else to do to look at you and your cigarette that's not even plugged in.
Yeah, and when she gets up and she starts walking over because she doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, she looks and realizes it's me, and she's looking at him like, it's empty, guy. I saw it. It's got a cylinder thing. He's just sitting in his book. Calm down. God, he's doing it again. He's doing it again.
Oh, God. Ugh. And you would think up in first class that you would get some type of, they're everywhere.
Oh, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere, these people.
You can't
get away from it. Let me tell you about my plane incident. It's not really an incident. It's just more of an observation I saw. I had a six-hour flight from New Jersey to Los Angeles on Sunday. And a guy sat next to me. I had the aisle seat. And can you give me a rough count? How many times you go to the bathroom on a six-hour flight? Just a rough estimate.
Two would be rough estimate.
All right, I was drinking heavy water. When I drink heavy water, yeah, I go to the bathroom a lot. So I say I went about four times.
You got the aisle.
I got the aisle.
Nobody's business then.
Nobody's business. In and out. The two people next to me not only didn't get up to go to the bathroom, didn't get up to do anything, and the guy I had to check halfway through the flight if he was still alive. He was a big guy, but didn't move the whole time. This guy, with his arms crossed, watching a movie and sleeping, did not move out of that position. I couldn't believe it. I almost was going to ask him at the end of the flight, how do you do it? What are you doing?
That is impressive. And, you know, people, I see them on those planes, you know, when they get, it's almost like you just put yourself in some zen place where physically you're there, but mentally you're not. And you just, that's the only way you can fly these days and coach, really.
Well, do you think drugs, maybe Ambien, something?
A lot of people do the exhaustion. They do the exhaustion route where they come to the airport having not slept for like 24 hours. So maybe it was that.
I mean, not one bathroom run and six, and he declined any liquid. Both of them. No, you know, nothing. No water, no cranberry juice. By the way, on the airplane, what's with the cran apple?
Why, are people getting that a lot now?
No, I go, every time, I go, cranberry. We have cran apple. Is that okay? Is there a thing where they can't carry just cranberry juice? It's got to be cran and apple together?
Oh, is that what it is? There's apple and berry in there all at once. Huh? You're one of those.
Yeah.
You're one of those guys. See, now I'd be next to you going, cranberry? Come on. It's water, coffee, soda. What are we doing here, cranberry? You're not at a freaking health club.
You know what, though? The cranberry juice? I don't have cranberry juice other than an airplane. Lana and I are going back up to Napa for the 1 year anniversary. And I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
Which is driving me a little crazy. They say you have a year to give someone a wedding gift, right?
Yeah.
And I was going through the wedding list the other day, and there's some people that just didn't get us a gift. I'm a little upset.
Do you think they donated money? Did you do one of those things where I have people donate money instead of giving money to you for your wedding? Because maybe they donated to a charity in your name or something like that, you know?
No, we didn't. There's no charity. The charity was us. And
well,
how do you feel about, like, I know who these people are?
I wouldn't let it bother me because it's a destination wedding. If it wasn't a
Listen, man. I'm not asking for a lot. I'm just asking for something that you just here's a token, something, a card, man. Come on, a card?
No, I hear you, but you know, that's just what I'm thinking maybe is going through their head. Is that you know, it was a destination wedding. And then to get you something little, maybe they're like, well, you know, what would I get them that they can't get themselves? So who knows what's going through their head? But, well, maybe nothing.
It's not like I'm looking for a gift. It's more of the thought. And to not even think to write a card or give a little something for any, it's just a little something bothers me. I'm sorry. It's how I grew up. It goes against everything I believe in. To come and not even give you, say, congratulate, nothing, and just to come and, I don't know, man. I'm really kind of beside myself over it. And these, I see these people now, and I almost want to say something.
I know. You know you can't. I know you know you can't. But yeah, you gotta just let that slide, man. You gotta let that roll off your back. Forget it. It was expensive to get out there, man. They had to get a hotel room.
I'm not talking that we need a mattress or some sheets for the bed. It's not where I'm coming from here. I'm coming from a place where some of these people, listen, a buddy of mine told me, I ain't getting you a gift. The gift is me being here. That's what he told me. I respect that more than someone just not even giving us a card or nothing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, luckily your buddy knows you well enough that he's comfortable to say that, you know? I mean, maybe these people
don't. Yeah, well, I respect that. But just to totally blow it off and nothing... I don't know. And believe me, the people that didn't get a gift, we could have had the wedding at our house and they still wouldn't have brought anything.
We share a toothbrush so we don't have to buy another toothbrush.
They are Extreme Cheapskates.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Other than stand-up and the entertainment field and just regular life, do you have a forte?
Like something I'm good at?
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that a forte? I got an argument with Jack the other day about something. I said, that's not my forte. And she was like, oh, what is your forte? What? I didn't know you had a forte. And it got me to wondering, do I have a forte?
Did you come up with anything?
I don't know. I mean, I guess a forte is not good. I mean, master. You know what I'm saying?
So other than stand-up comedy, do I have a forte? No.
I'm a hell of a bike rider. Is that a forte?
What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't fall down? What does that even mean?
Well, bike ride. What do you brake well? I mean, what is...
In Manhattan, I used to hold on to the sides of the buses. Going up hills.
Oh, you did that?
Yeah, I did that. I went through a phase where I did that. And then I woke up one day and I just, all of a sudden, it seemed way scarier. I guess you just get older in a day, you know? But yeah, I used to hold on. And then I used to see the young kids on the back of the city buses. There's like a black grate of a vent. And if you jump on the back bumper and put your hands up, you can hold that black grate. And one time, man, it was like 3 a.m. and I had to walk 20 blocks home and I was like 24 years old, loaded, and the bus had just stopped. I jumped on the fucking back bumper and rode that bitch down 2nd Avenue. Ridiculous. Nah,
that's something I wouldn't do, man.
I did it once.
You got to have some screws loose to be hanging onto a bus with a bike. Didn't you ever get yelled at from the bus driver?
No, they would honk, and then you'd see them in the mirror waving for you to get off, but they wouldn't do anything. And they never got fast enough. It was just great. You just hold on to the side door, and it just takes you right up the hill. But that forte, man. What about
forte,
cooking?
Man,
cooking?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I could cook, but I wouldn't say, listen, that's my forte. Every once in a while, I'd knock it out of the park. But I think forte is a consistent, you know, anytime it comes up, you do it really, really well. And I don't know if there's anything that I've really mastered.
Is there anything, if you're around a bunch of people and something needs to be done, without a doubt, don't even ask around. I'm the guy.
No. Do you got anything like that? Like, call Pete for it. He'll do it. He's really good with that. Is there anything?
Sadly, unclogging toilets. That's my forte. I did it for 4 years in the summers with my uncle, and I could get that bitch flowing for you.
Yeah, but isn't it just a... whatever. What, the plunger? And then what are you doing?
It's a snake. And then knowing how to get through the clog, knowing where the clog is, knowing if you got to go down through the toilet, or if maybe you got to find the trap and come up through the trap. Maybe the cesspool is filled and there's no clog at all. There's a lot going on, guy. There's a lot going on.
Oh, wow.
That's why it's a forte. Wow. That's why it's a forte, bro.
Oh, you got a forte then. I just don't think I have one other than maybe washing a car. I mean, is that a forte?
That's a forte. Do you feel like if there's any man next to you and you both have the same products and the same amount of time, do you feel there's few men that would wash a car as well as you would?
Yeah, I think I have a forte on washing a car. There's a lot of things that I do. I'm not kidding. There's a lot of things that I do on the inside of the car in particular. I call it brush strokes, where I actually get, you know, if you were to vacuum your rug and you see the vacuum lines.
Oh, I love that.
Okay. Well, I get the vacuum lines. It's called brush strokes with a brush in my car. So it looks like there's lines on the floor mat.
Wow.
Yeah, that it's a nice touch. I mean, I highly recommend a brush stroke. After you vacuum the car, you take a brush and you basically, it's almost like stripes. So when you get in the car, it's diagonal stripes on the floor mat.
Oh my God. That's class.
That's a forte.
If I had a 5-star Michelin restaurant, I think I would have my valet guys brush the car's carpets when you bring the car back out for the patron.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Now, this is the kind of show, aside from the sitcom, when you have free time, you got to make a video of you washing a car and explaining on camera how to do it, and then edit that puppy up with your sister, and it's just a how-to for a man. I mean, men don't know how to do these things properly.
These little slices of life that we can maybe put together and do a how-to video.
On life stuff, there's a lot of fatherless kids out there that can look to these videos, man, and see how to properly wash a car, how to this, how to that. Now, when it comes to the waxing, do you do a buff job? Do you rub it in?
I don't wax my car anymore. What I do is I get it detailed by a professional once a year, or they'll do it with a buff, because the buff is an art. You could really screw up your car if you don't know how to buff it right. You start getting like those swirls.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I don't have a forte with, is the buffing aspect of it. Now, when I used to do it by hand, yeah, I used to rub in the wax under, preferably, a garage, because you don't want the sun beat down. Plus, you don't want to wax when it's hot.
On Long Island, we used to do the Italiano, park your car on the front lawn under the tree, baby.
Oh, is that what you used to do? I see, even the tree I don't like, because sometimes the tree, they get sun shooting through the leaves and could hit the car. So you go underneath. Yeah.
Hey, look, I'm talking to a man who brushes the carpets. You can't have sunlight getting through them branches.
No. You got to go underneath.
We got a spider situation. It's weird what people do and don't like. Like, for example, you know, man, I could have a grizzly bear on my front lawn, and I would think it's kind of cool. But if there was a gardener snake on my porch, I'd freak out. I can't take snakes.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, we get spiders, and Jackie gets so ballistic and freaks out that it actually annoys me. I'm like, what's the deal? It's a spider. It's no big deal. But then we had a mouse. And she did the glue trap and caught the mouse. And those glue traps are the worst because the mouse is still alive and you feel terrible. So here is a person freaking out over a spider. Meanwhile, she takes a knife and just presses it against the mouse's neck, put it out of its suffering.
Oh, wait. She takes a knife to the mouse's neck while it's in the glue trap?
The dull part, the edge of the knife that's not sharp, and she presses it to the neck. She's done it before, until the mouse suffocates. Because some people just take the mouse with the glue trap and, you know, throw it out, and the poor mouse is alive in the garbage. But I'm like, but you won't go near a spider, but you're doing euthanasia on the mice.
Oh, that's a woman, man. That's a woman. to take a dull knife and literally choke out the mouse.
Choke out the mouse.
While it's in the... Man, cut the wind right out of the... That's impressive.
She takes the knife right out of the hand of her husband laying on the floor in a puddle of ketchup. And then she suffocates the mouse. Holy shit. Oh, all right, we're going to get this show back on track. Bro. You challenge me to the MS thing or whatever. I challenge you to get it.
ALS.
We need a guest. I challenge you to a guest.
You challenge me to a guest. Oh, okay, listen, I gotta work on that then. If I'm leaving. Yeah, all right. I'll get a guest.
Now that we're back.
I'll get a guest.
All right, yeah. So are you going to be in town next week? Could we do the show with, in the same room, right?
Oh, yeah, we could do it. So we're going to be face-to-face next week.
Yes.
All right, back in action.
Back in action. Let's get this puppy
touch
going.
Touch your kneecaps.
Oh, shit, man. Reconnecting. Get this puppy going. Get the listeners back.
I know. We got to apologize to the listeners again, once again. The lack of consistency of the show has been very poor. I mean, terrible. There's no excuse. We should be coming at you once a week, strong. We're a little out of sorts.
Yeah, and we'll be able to explain better next week, I would imagine.
Yeah, we're a little out of sorts right now. We'll have a valid explanation for you guys next week. Couple things I wanted to mention. Check out SebastianLive.com. Taking a couple weeks off. I'll be back on the road in Brea at the Improv starting in around September 8th. And then it's basically boom, boom, boom all the way through to the rest of the year. I do have to say that I did sell this show, a pilot script, to NBC. We went 0-3 with ABC, CBS, and Fox. And the last pitch was to NBC, who had given me a shot last year. And now they have a totally new crew in there, except for one guy who happens to be a big fan of mine. He's still there, and he's basically championed me throughout this process. His name's David Slevin. I got to give it up to him. And I went in. And they bought it in the room.
Beauty. So, that's right.
We'll see what happens.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so we're happy. And I'm editing the special as we speak. I'm going to send you a clip of the special, and I want you to tell me if it is hack. It's an airport bit. I don't know. You know, it's one of those bits, and I don't know if you've ever done a bit. You go, someone said this before, and not in exact words, but I mean, this topic, this thing been covered before. Do you ever go through that?
Shit, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I wrote a joke like that last night that I got to call a friend and see if he knows if anyone does this, because that's the same thing, but yes.
And what is that? It's just that, listen, I know a lot has been talked about just observational humor in general. You know, a lot of comedians see the same thing. But then you have material like, you know, I'm doing the Bocelli thing now on stage, and the guy with the guy that did the butterfly. Those things are very personal, and you're not going to hear that anywhere else just because I experienced that. But when you experience things that are a little bit more broader, do you think you run into a place where, should I be doing this?
Yeah, I do, but it depends, you know? It's like, we're all going to have bits on flying because we all fly. And, you know, there's a lot of topics we're all going to hit the same thing. As long as you feel your angle is personal to you and different than anyone, you know, and different than anyone else would be saying, or their take on it, then, you know, that's not hack, man. If you personalize something, you have your own take. You know, you could have a joke on anything, doing laundry, and Joe Schmo can have one. It's when you start to go, wait, man, I think someone says pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, send it my way, man. I'd like to take a look, definitely.
What do you got? You touring? You up and about? September? What do we got?
So I go in to pitch to the networks. Next week, I got ABC, CBS, and NBC. And then the following week, I got Fox. And then, like I said, going to do the Conan O'Brien show on October 1st. And if you go to PeteCorelli.com, same as you, I play Hilarities in Cleveland in September, and then I'm pretty much on the road the rest of the year.
Do you know what your Conan set is going to be?
No, I never did Conan. I always wanted to do it. And he's like, yeah, dude, fucking love it. You don't have to change a thing. You don't have to come out here and work it out. Just come do it. When do you want to do it? I was like, sweet. Let's do it. My question.
I'm interested to see how you're gonna like Conan. Just give me. I did Conan, and it, for me, it was the crowd was they were looking at me like I don't know. I didn't have one of my best sets on Conan.
Well, I think you're too one of these kind of quintessential guys that it's hard to bottle in 5 minutes. You know, it's
a, yeah, that's true. I hear that.
I mean, it gets easier the more and more you get known. So right away, you know, they know you. But, you know, you have bits that can easily last longer than a normal Conan set, you know?
Well, yeah, it's just like you run into that. Do you do a lot of bits all in 5 minutes, or do you take one or two and just do those? How are you going to do it?
I stick more to jokes in a situation like this than bits. I mean, they're bits, but they're very, you know, like set up, boom, set up, punch, a little more of that. So I get a lot of chances for laughs as opposed to like one long setup. Like that, you know, like I've seen like Chappelle does that. He's really a master of it. It'll be completely silent for 3.5 minutes. Because he hasn't gotten to the punch yet, and I'm sitting there thinking, this guy's out of his fucking mind. That's way too long. You're putting way too much pressure on one joke. You know, and then he hits him with his punch or whatever, and everyone dies. But I tend to do more like, it's more setup joke, setup. So, but it's not, but I'm not rushing the jokes at all. So, yeah, take my time, say the joke, and boom.
How are you going to open... Because that's always a thing for me is like when you come out of the curtain,
yeah,
and you hit your mark. What's your like? Is it, hey, what's going on? Or do you get right into it? What is it? Nice to be here. Yeah. What do you say?
It depends, man. Like, I think, I don't know if I told you this, but the first time I did Letterman, they go wave to him or just give him a nod, acknowledge him. Did I tell you that? And Jackie picked out my outfit. You can see it online. I got a hot pink button shirt on with a collar that comes out over the suit. Right? No tie.
Yeah.
And I come out and I look at Letterman and I don't know why, but I shoot him the invisible, you know, I'm not the invisible, the fake gun with my fingers. I shoot him a gun. And I got the pink collar on. Letterman was probably looking at me like, is this guy going to do stand up or sell me an 8-ball of cocaine right now?
Oh, God. Man, I got to see that. Is that online?
It is.
I'm looking at it right now. Oh, my God. You look like Travolta in Saturday Night Fever.
I know.
What the fuck?
And get this, after the show, the guy who booked me, Eddie Brill, he's like, Letterman usually lets us know within a couple of weeks if he plans on having you back again. He says it to me before the show. And then I do the show, and, you know, it went really well. But the Letterman...
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I just saw the fake gun. Oh, man.
Oh, I know, man.
Hey, listen, I got to post this on our page.
Post it up.
Yeah, no, this is definitely... Your shirt is almost unbuttoned to your tits.
Well, listen, man, before I performed, as I told you, Eddie said, you know, Letterman will let us know in a couple weeks who's going to have you back. And then I did the show and it went well. The Letterman crowds are awesome. Best place you can perform. So I come off and Eddie comes up to me when the show ends and I didn't leave the building yet. And he goes, that was great. What a great job. Dave loved it. He already said he's going to have you back on, right? And I go, Eddie, get out of here. I go, what exactly did Letterman say? And he goes, honestly, the first thing he said was, what was with his shirt?
Oh, God.
Now, when you did Conan, I can't decide what to wear. I don't want to, like, I'm thinking about just wearing a suit with no tie.
A suit with no tie. I mean, do you have to be in a suit every time you go on TV?
No, you don't. But, you know, Conan dresses sharp. All those guys dress sharp. You know, it's kind of, I'm not 30 years old anymore. You know, I'm thinking maybe a nice button shirt, suit. I like to, if there's no mic, I like to keep my hands in my pockets a little and, you know, move them in your pocket to give a little effect. Like, oh, you ever see that move?
Wait a minute. Do you like the no microphone?
Oh, yeah, I embrace it. I can do no mic. Last time I did Letterman with no mic, halfway through, it was going so smooth. I'm like, oh, my God, they might ask me to replace him. It did lead to Letterman did want to try and do a TV show, which was exciting. And I go, so they go, you're going to meet with Worldwide Pants. And I go, oh, my God. I'm fucking pitching to David Letterman, and they go, no, you think Letterman's going to be in the room as you're going, so my best friend is played by, so, you know. And they go, no, it's his company, man. And I was like, oh, okay. But, so anyway, yeah, what did you wear when you did Conan?
I wore it was just a long sleeve, thin sweater.
Oh, okay, I remember now, yeah. And you close with a bit about the vet or something, about a Corvette. About why would you wax or something like that? That last joke that your dad gave you a hard time about. You talked about it on the cast, I remember.
Oh, yeah. I just remember his crowd being very young.
Yeah. Yeah, Carson Daly a few times, and that's a nightmare, dude. They're like 16. They were like really young, and you just had to keep telling yourself, I'm not playing to them. I'm playing to the TV. Play to the TV.
Yeah.
But it's hard when that studio audience isn't lighting up for you.
Oh no, it's bad. That's what I felt on Conan. I felt like it was very it was tough in the first minute and a half. I felt like, man, I'm digging myself out of a hole that I didn't even make yet.
I know. Now the next level is the couch. I want to sit down.
Oh, get the couch.
God, just sit down, sip my drink. How was your flight? Oh, let me tell you, Conan.
There's so much stuff that goes on with the comedy scene and just going to do shows. I was at this Vinny's over the weekend, and I was doing this Jewish rant. I do a joke about the Jews have no food, and I went to the Passover meal, and, you know, after breakfast, the Jews fall apart. I was making fun of Jewish food. And at the end of the rant, I get from the audience member, "You done?" I go, "What?" are you done? I go, "Well, what? The Jewish thing?" "Oh, yeah." And I don't know if this ever happened to you, but I blacked out. Like, I went on a full, I can't tell you what I said. The only thing I remember at the end of it was, "Get the fuck out of the building." You ever in a moment where you don't even know what you're saying, and people like Jason Lawhead, the guy who was working with me, was telling me some of the stuff that I was saying, and I was like, I didn't even remember "get out of the building." I thought I told her just to get out of the room, but I threw "get out of the building" in there. I lost it.
First of all, why was she saying, "Are you done?" Because she likes Jewish food? Because she wasn't done with you. She didn't want you to stop performing. She just wanted you to wrap up that bit. And why did you get so? And why did you get so mad that she wasn't into that particular Jewish?
Well, in reflect, I go, "Why would you?" Why I said to her, you know, after I had a while to kind of reflect, I remember saying to her, "Why would you do that?" I go, "Don't you have any sense of humor?" I go, "My wife is Jewish." Like, if I didn't like Jewish people or did it, why, you know, like, I married a Jewish woman. I go, "I just made fun of Italians for 25 minutes. And she goes, "I'm not Jewish." And that's where I lost. I go, "Then what are you angry about? Get the fuck out of the building."
No. Did they kick her out?
No.
Oh, so
she was there with a big group. And this is what I can't stand. And at the end of that, and there was another point in the act where I made reference to Jewish people, and I kind of looked her way. So there was a couple things I did throughout to kind of give it back to her. And at the end, I don't understand this, why people do this. At the end, I'm walking past her table, and her husband stands up and goes, "Hey, can we get your autograph? All these people came very far to come see you." So I signed a piece of paper, and the woman is like offering me a hug. It's like, what? You just disrupt the show, and now at the end, it's like we're gonna hug and be friends now?
Come hug me, I know you want to.
What is that? I was literally upset with you, and I wanted to come off stage and flip your table. that's how I was feeling. I just don't think they understand. When you're doing something up there and then they come in on a joke or they disrupt the show, it's just, I don't know. So, yeah, I can't deal with it.
All right. Anyway, there's another doozy of a show, huh?
Oh, my God.
Do we need to add a third person?
Listen.
Do we need a female?
Listen. Sometimes this happens where we slide a little bit, and for whatever the reason, the stories don't click, or there's not a, you know, it's every once in a while this happens, because this show sucked.
The show has ended.
I go, why don't you calm down? She's sitting there working. You're making a pop-up because you're acting like a two-year-old.
Oh, and, what a nice, what a keep it going.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of the building!
Let the river rock you like a cradle. Climb to the treetops, child, if you're able. Let your hands tie a knot across the table. Come and touch the things you cannot feel. And close your fingertips and fly where I can't hold you. Let the sun rain fall and let the dewy clouds enfold you. And maybe you can sing to me the words I just told you. If all the things you feel ain't what they seem, then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't nothing but a dream. The mockingbird sings each different song. Each song has wings, they won't stay long. Do those who hear think wrong? While the church bell tolls its one note song, and the school bell is tinkling to the throng. Come here where your ears cannot hear, and close your ears, child, and listen what I'll tell you. Follow in the darkest night the sounds that may impel you, and the song that I am singing may disturb or serve to quell you. If all the sound you hear ain't what they sing, then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't but a dream. The rising smell of fresh cut grass, smothered cities choke and yell with fuming gas. I hold some grapes up to the sun, and their flavor breaks upon my tongue. With eager tongues we taste our strife and fill our lungs with seeds of life. Come taste and smell the waters of our time, and close your lips, child, so softly I might kiss you. Let your flower perfume out and let the winds caress you. As I walk on through the garden, I am hoping I don't miss you. If all the things you taste ain't what they seem, then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't nothing but a dream. The sun and moon both are right, and
now silver leaves on mirrors bring delight. And the color of your eyes are fiery bright. While darkness blinds the skies with all its light, come see where your eyes cannot see. Then close your eyes, child, and look at what I'll show you. Let your mind go reeling out and let the breezes blow you. And maybe when we meet, suddenly I will know you. If all the things you see ain't what they seem, then don't mind me, 'cause I ain't nothing but a dream. And you can follow, and you can follow, follow.